is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome James Tooley, the author of two books about education in the world and coming to America. The new book is Really Good Schools, Global Lessons for High-Caliber, Low-Cost Education, just published. And the earlier book is about education as well, published in the first decade of this century, The Beautiful Tree, A Personal Journey into How the World's Poorest People Are Educating Themselves. James, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this, and congratulations. I begin with your discovery of low-cost schools. You are a philosopher of education, self-described. And yet, one day, in exploring the schools of India, I believe, you became curious about the poorest parts of Indian schools and how they were organized. And that led you to discover that not everything is state-run in India or anywhere else. What did you discover in India? Where and how did you come to this revelation about about private schools for low cost? Good evening to you.
Good evening. Yes, so that's right. I was a philosopher of education. That was my PhD was in philosophy of education, and for various reasons, I'd become an expert on global education, and I was doing consultancy for the International Finance Corporation, which is the private arm of the World Bank. I was in Hyderabad in South Central India. This was 21 years ago now, and I was doing consultancy work about elite private schools, elite private colleges, and for whatever reason, this didn't satisfy me. My life should be about the poor, should be about the less blessed in society, and here I was doing consultancy, which would only help the rich. And so on a day off from this consultancy work, I took a auto rickshaw, one of the three-wheeler vehicles, down into the old city where I knew the slums of the old city were behind this building called the Charminar, the Arc de Triomphe of South Central India. And I wandered into these slums, actually with a hunch about what I might find. We can come to why I had this hunch. I wandered into these slums, and there I found a school. It was a school that was charging about $1 a month in those days. It was a private school, a low-cost private school. Then I found another and another, and soon was in touch with a federation of 500 of these low-cost private schools. Now, I discovered them for the outside. In those days, no one outside, you know, had heard of these. No one in America or England had heard of these schools, or if they had, they thought they were quite a, you know, rare, unusual phenomenon. But I became part of that. I became linked with this group of 500 schools, and I became serious about investigating this phenomenon because it seemed to me, why was no one talking about this? And, you know, in the initial days, I looked in India, and I asked to see the government schools. I talked to parents, and they said, you know, I said, well, why are you sending your children to a private school? You're, you know, I didn't quite say this, but you're poor. In the government school, there's free lunch, there's free books. You have to pay money. Why are you sending your children here? And parents would say, in the government school, our children are abandoned. And I went to see for myself, and it was an image I shall have with me forever. I went into this government school. The first class, it was a nice building, much nicer than the private school buildings. The first classroom I visited, there were 130 kids sitting on the floor doing nothing, being supervised by one teacher with a stick. And I realized then these eager young children waiting, you know, so eager to meet this stranger, they were abandoned because the teachers didn't come to school and teach. They had an informal rota amongst themselves. So one or two would be there just to keep basic order, and the rest would go and do their thing. An image that stayed with me forever. And after that, John, I went looking for this phenomenon everywhere.
Let's travel with you. Let's travel with you. You go to Nairobi, Kenya. You go to Accra, Ghana. You find Lagos, Nigeria. And eventually we're wandering the earth with you, James. You're in China. This is 20 years ago, Gansu, China. And what you discover is that everybody doesn't know about other countries doing this. The assumption is the one that I would have had. Private schools are for the elite. And in discovering these different places with these different schools, did you do it in the same fashion? Did you ask, let's go to the poorest part of the city? Or was there a guide to find these schools in Ghana or Kenya?
No, it was always, you know, I went to these places on my own, but typically I would have made a contact with some, you know, an NGO, non-government organization, or a university or a think tank. I'd made some contact before I would get there. But typically in those days, you know, it does seem hard to believe now that I've been so involved in the sector, but in those days, 20, now 15 years ago, I would arrive in the country and I'd meet the person and they'd say, well, you may have found it in India, you may have found it in Kenya, but in our country, private schools are for the elite or the rich. And I would say, well, should we go to the slums together? Sometimes people wouldn't come to these slums because I remember in Lagos, for example, in Nigeria, when people arrive in Lagos, they travel across, you know, foreigners like us, they travel across to Victoria Island, VI, which is the posher part of town where the nicer hotels are. But if you travel across Third Mainland Bridge, you look down and there's this shanty town built on stilts into the black waters of the Lagos Lagoon. And I was there with my host taking me to the posher hotel. I said, that's where I want to go. That's where I think there'll be schools. And he said, no, you can't go there. It's too dangerous. And so the next day I had to go on my own. He wouldn't come. And there I found the low-cost schools, you know. And so it was all the time you just went into these places, you would find the schools, and then I would then recruit a team using the local person to do the thorough research, to do the thorough tramping around, finding the schools, comparing achievement in the schools with the government schools. So it was an amazing journey. One of the reviewers of The Beautiful Tree said to me that I suffered from a overdose of wanderlust, and I guess that was true of those years.
A lot of flying hours. This is pre-pandemic world, the ability to travel to these different countries without the questions being asked. But you published Beautiful Tree in 2009, says my note, James. Correct me here. You were there. And
true.
It there is politics now because there's an election in 2010 in which the conservatives are successful, and you are introduced through a number of coincidences, and because it is your mother country, to Andrew Mitchell. Who is Andrew Mitchell in 2010, and how does that help the story move forward for England, for Great Britain, and then for the world?
Okay, so when I first met him, I guess he was Shadow Secretary of State for International Development. So that's the opposition person involved in development. And then he became, when the Conservatives they had to go in coalition with the Liberal Democrats in 2010, they then created the government. And he was then the Secretary of State for International Development. And he read my book. He got excited by this whole phenomenon. He went to see some of these schools in Lagos, Nigeria, and he recommended that this book should be read widely, and he recommended I should go and see the permanent secretary of DFID, the Department for International Development, who was very skeptical about this whole thing, very, very skeptical about this whole thing, and didn't really, you know, thought Andrew Mitchell was perhaps, you know, mistaken or exaggerating something. Anyway, he then was on a trip with the Prime Minister, David Cameron, to Lagos in Nigeria, and they went to see some of these schools that I've been talking about in that slum that I described, in the slum of, it's called Makoko, the one visible from Third Mainland Bridge as you go into town, go into the nice part of town. And he went to visit some of the schools, and in one of them that I'd actually put up a internet-connected computer, he emailed me and said, I haven't had many surprises in 27 years of development. This is one. I'm impressed by the quantity. You know, there were probably 30 low-cost private schools in that slum alone at the time, but also by the quality of what I've seen. And after that, DFID became convinced this was a sector worth looking at. And so many others followed suit as well. You know, other agencies all became interested in the sector. And why not become interested? Because that these schools are serving the majority of the urban
poor. But you have doubters, James. You have doubters. We'll turn to the BBC when we come back. Who doubt James? The book is, their new book is Really Good Schools, Global Lessons for High Caliber, Low Cost Education. James Tooley is the author. The work is highly recommended by a distinguished panel of educators, including Chester Finn, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution and a former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Education, who reports, in the fascinating and provocative book, Really Good Schools, James Tooley applies his immense learning about low-cost, entirely private schools around the world to develop a daring and truly thought-provoking proposal along those lines for the United States. En route, he engages in a lively virtual argument with both Charles Murray and Milton Friedman. Check it out. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.